Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to unpack a really foundational idea in how we think about right and wrong, natural law ethics. You've probably seen this pop up in various contexts in the materials, and we're going to sort of trace its roots and pull out the key stuff.
That's right. It's pretty fascinating how far back this line of thinking goes. We're talking ancient Greece people like Socrates, Aristotle, the Stoics. And then it really, developed within a theological framework, thanks to figures like Augustine and especially Thomas Aquinas, who's really central.
Okay, so the core of it, natural law ethics, it really hinges on this concept of telos, kind of like a built-in purpose, right? An aim or a function for everything.
Exactly, like a knife is for cutting, a chair for sitting. Simple examples.
Yeah, easy with things we make. But the idea is this applies to everything, including us humans as beings with a particular nature.
Precisely. The central thought here, like the reading suggests, is that God, as the creator, set up this functional rational order.
Mm.
And within that, humans have a specific design, certain inherent functions. So by understanding how we're made, what our sort of natural inclinations are, we can actually figure out certain moral truths.
You mean like how we should act to fulfill that purpose?
Yes, exactly. How we ought to act.
So it's different from like laws of physics. Gravity just is. It describes how things behave.
Right. Those are descriptive natural laws.
But this kind of natural law is prescriptive. It's about how we ought to behave. And the idea is if we follow these, things generally go well. We flourish, achieve that telos.
Generally, yes. And when we deviate, well, that's when you tend to see negative outcomes, things related to not fulfilling our purpose or well-being.
And our ability to figure this out, it's tied to our reason, right? Being made in God's image, as many sources mention.
Exactly. We have this innate capacity to discern right from wrong, at least on a basic level. Aquinas really hammered this home. He argued, we inherently get these basic human ends.
Like what, specifically?
Things like self-preservation, seeking knowledge, raising kids, not harming others, stuff we kind of just know.
So it's not just taught, it's more intuitive.
That's the idea. And it's not purely philosophical either. There are theological roots, right? You mentioned the readings point to Romans, Psalms, Jeremiah.
Yeah, that Romans 2 passage is really interesting. Paul talking about Gentiles, people without the Mosaic law, doing naturally what the law requires. Like, it's written on their hearts.
Exactly. It suggests this sort of universal moral sense, not totally dependent on having specific scriptures, which brings us nicely to Aquinas himself. He really organized these ideas.
Okay, Aquinas's breakdown of law. This is where it gets structured. He didn't just say natural law. He had categories. Let's start with eternal law. What's that?
Eternal law, for Aquinas, is basically God's grand design. The entire set of decrees governing the whole universe. Think of it as the ultimate rationality behind everything.
The cosmic blueprint, sort of.
Yeah, the big picture. From the smallest atom to the biggest galaxy. Philosophically, it connects to ideas about a first cause, an underlying order.
Okay. So eternal law is the whole shebang. Then natural law fits inside that somehow.
Right. Natural law is the slice of that eternal law that we humans, with our reason, can actually grasp. It's aimed specifically at our good, our flourishing.
And this is where those primary precepts come in. The things Budzewski says we can't not know.
Exactly. Super fundamental stuff like do good, avoid evil, love your neighbor. Basic, almost self-evident principles. And it's amazing how these basics underpin arguments for human rights across time and cultures, Self-preservation leading to arguments against killing innocents, for example.
So primary precepts are the rock bottom rules. Then you have secondary precepts. How are they different?
Secondary precepts are more specific moral norms we figure out by reasoning from the primary ones. So like don't lie comes from do good and maintaining social trust. Or return what belongs to others flows out of justice and loving your neighbor. Still general, but more about specific actions.
Got it. Eternal law, natural law, with primary and secondary precepts. But then there's divine law. Where does that fit?
Divine law is a part of the eternal law that God specifically revealed through Scripture. Things maybe reason alone wouldn't fully get, or specifics needed for salvation, perhaps.
So commandments, doctrines, stuff beyond pure reason.
Exactly. It complements natural law, giving more detailed guidance based on revelation.
And finally, human law, like our actual laws, traffic laws, stuff like that.
Yep. Human law should be ideally apply natural law and sometimes divine law to the nitty-gritty of society. Traffic laws promote safety, which links back to self-preservation, the common good.
Right.
And historically, you see laws against things like adultery, directly reflecting biblical ideas about marriage, seen as part of the natural order. So human laws are meant to be the practical, on-the-ground rules based on those bigger principles.
Okay, it sounds very logical, very ordered. But the materials also say our understanding isn't always perfect. What messes up our grasp of natural law?
That's a really important point. Aquinas saw several obstacles. One big one is passion, strong emotions, anger, fear, lust.
Mm-hmm.
When you're overwhelmed, it's hard to think straight about what's fair or right. Like seeing through a fog, you know?
Totally. Like road rage, you might think something's justified in the moment that you'd never agree with later. What else?
Evil habits. Doing bad things repeatedly can actually, well, warp your moral compass.
Like normalize it for yourself.
Yeah. The example sometimes used is pornography, potentially desensitizing someone over time. The repeated action shapes your perception of right and wrong, like getting a callus on your conscience.
Okay, so bad habits dull our moral sense. What about evil dispositions of nature? Sounds kind of innate.
It's probably less about being born evil, more about natural inclinations or vulnerabilities that, without reason guiding them, might make someone more prone to vice.
Like a tendency towards something.
Maybe. A modern parallel might be like a genetic predisposition to alcoholism. It doesn't excuse bad choices, but it could influence reasoning or make certain vices more tempting, potentially affecting how someone understands moral boundaries. It's a vulnerability, perhaps.
Interesting. And vicious custom. That sounds like society's fault.
Pretty much. If you grow up where, say, bribery is just how things are done, or certain kinds of dishonesty are totally normal, that can really skew your view of what natural law demands. The norms around you make wrong seem right, or at least acceptable. Like the air you breathe, you don't notice it's bad until you go somewhere else.
Right, the water we swim in. And the last one mentioned was evil persuasion.
Yeah, this is about being convinced by bad arguments. Sophisticated sounding justifications for doing wrong can actually distort someone's understanding of natural law. They get talked into believing something bad is okay. And, you know, Aquinas probably didn't think this list was exhaustive, but it shows key ways our moral reasoning can get messed up.
Makes sense. Now, like any big theory, natural law gets pushback. One major criticism you see is, well, if it's natural and knowable, why don't we all agree? You can always find someone endorsing awful stuff.
That's a classic, yeah. A fair question. But thinkers like Jay Bochensky, who you might have read, offer responses. One is that we can know things we don't know we know.
Meaning?
Just because someone says they don't believe in a moral rule doesn't mean they don't intuitively grasp it underneath. Like the law of non-contradiction in logic, people use it constantly without knowing the formal name.
So an implicit knowledge, even if denied.
Kind of. And the other part of Bochensky's response is crucial. It's possible to repress or suppress what we know is right.
Ah, so willfully ignoring it.
Exactly. Self-interest, prejudice, fear. People might deny a truth like human dignity, even if deep down they know it, because acknowledging it is inconvenient or costly.
Yeah, that definitely happens. Okay, another objection mentioned is that people seem to invent new values all the time. Doesn't that contradict a fixed natural order?
Bochensky argues against that, too. He says, true values aren't really invented, they're discovered. What looks like a new value is often just a new label or a new application of an old fundamental value in a new context.
Can you give an example?
His analogy is good.
Yeah.
You can't just invent a new primary color. Similarly, he'd say, what we call new values are usually just different ways of looking at or applying timeless principles like justice, fairness, or compassion in light of new situations or knowledge.
Interesting. So they're re-expressions, not inventions. Okay,
yeah.
Those are some good counters. But the material also points out real limitations, right? Natural law doesn't solve everything.
Definitely not. One big limitation is that it often gives pretty general guidance on super complex specific issues, especially in diverse societies like ours.
Like what?
Like exactly how should wealth be distributed for perfect justice?
Mm.
Or what's the precise legal status of certain drugs? Getting clear, universally agreed answers just from broad natural law principles is really tough.
So it's more compass than detailed map?
That's a good way to put it. And another challenge is just figuring out definitively if a specific action really fulfills our telos, interpreting our purpose and how choices fit. Well, there can be reasonable disagreements. What flourishing means isn't always simple.
And then there's that big one, equating unnatural with immoral.
Yes, absolutely crucial. The material probably stressed this. The classic, postage stamp example, right?
Right. Licking a stamp isn't the tongue's primary biological function, but it's obviously not immoral.
Exactly. It shows you can't just say, well, that organ's main job is X, so doing Y with it is wrong.
Right.
We have to be really careful drawing direct moral lines just from biological function, or what seems natural in that sense.
Okay, so summing up our deep dive. We looked at natural law ethics, its roots in telos, God's design.
And Aquinas' framework, eternal, natural, divine, human law.
Right, and then the things that obscure our understanding, passions, bad habits, social pressure.
Vicious custom, evil persuasion, yeah.
We touched on objections, like the lack of universal agreement and Bochensky's responses about implicit knowledge and repression.
And the idea that values are discovered, not invented.
And finally, the limitations, its generality on complex issues, the difficulty defining telos sometimes, and the big caution about just equating unnatural with immoral.
That covers it pretty well. It's a really influential way of thinking about morality, offering the strong foundation. But as we saw, it's vital to see its limits too, especially when facing really tricky modern problems.
Which brings us to a final thought for everyone listening. Thinking about this idea of a natural order, inherent human purposes, how might that perspective shape how you view current debates? Things like AI, social structures, maybe even your own sense of purpose. What basic goods might natural law point towards, even if the specific path forward is, well, complicated? It's a framework that's been around for ages, but it still offers a unique lens on the choices we make now. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.